Good evening. Thank you so much for staying tuned to 90.9 FM. I want to thank my mom for giving birth to me in the beautiful Virgin Islands. She had 50 states and Puerto Rico to choose from. She chose the Virgin Islands, and I thank her each chance that I get. My name is Lawrence Bichelta, and my guest this evening is Charlene Peterson. Did I say your name correctly? Because I always screw up people's name.
Good evening. It's Chanel Peterson.
Chanel Peterson. Okay. All right. I apologize. So, Chanel, I know you work at WAPA, but I do a little different type of interviews. I'm not into too much interested in the WAPA. We'll get that down maybe in about 10, 15 minutes. What I normally do is learn about my guests. So we want to know where you were born and raised and different schooling you went to and favorite foods, different things like that. And then we'll get into your job at WAPA and the great things that you do there. But before we go there, we just want to know where were you born and raised and who is Chanel Peterson?
Well, thank you so much for having me this evening, and thank you to your listening audience. So, yes, my name is Chanel, again, Peterson, and I'm born and raised on St. Thomas. I'm actually a fifth-generation Virgin Islander, and my brother does sometimes correct me because he says we're actually sixth-generation, but I haven't confirmed that just yet. So I'm a product of the public school system. I went to Emmanuel Benjamin Oliver Elementary School. And then I later, actually after the storms, I did spend a couple years in the States living after Maryland, but I came back home because I was missing my beautiful island. And so I graduated from the Shalimalia High School and I continued my higher education at the University of the Virgin Islands.
How, before we get to UVI, how was the transition? First of all, how do you feel seeing EBO in a direct situation it is now? I've never been to the school, but I like walked through it and saw how the campus is much bigger than All Saints. I went to All Saints. So when I see green, right, as a person, when I see green for cheering, I'm so happy for them because I ain't had a green thing. The only green thing we had was maybe slush, green slush or something. When the kids mix mashed potatoes with the chocolate milk, that was how we never had green space. So when I used to go to EBO and saw all that green space, I was just totally amazed. It's not even a school anymore.
It is not. It was really disheartening to hear about the closing of EBO. Because, you know, I had, like you said, they're just such fond memories. And EBO is such a huge campus. We really had layers and layers. In fact, we had two fields growing up. And then in addition to that, like plenty courtyard. So I remember we used to play, you know, jump rope in one area, and then we just run around and play tag in another. And of course, we had sports down at the lower field on the western side of the campus. So it's definitely sad to see that it's no longer there. But there's a huge EBO massive crew still out there. So and we always still chat about the good times we had back at EBO.
That's good to hear. So after, you mentioned Hurricane Maryland. After that, how was it, the transition to go to the States? Was it a little rocky? Was it okay for you? Did you get butterflies going to school in the States?
Well, you know, it was a challenging time in that, you know, most of my family was still here in the territory. So some of us came up to the States, but some of us stayed. And so that was challenging because being away from, you know, family for such a long time was my first experience. And I mean, I was fortunate that we moved to Florida. And so there's a lot of cultural awareness there with, you know, being Caribbean and West Indians in Florida. And so at least that wasn't the hard part. I mean, of course I stood out because I had a very strong accent growing up, as one can imagine for any elementary school student moving to the States. But for me, I've always been very quick to make friends, very social. So, I mean, I made lots of friends for the time that I was there. And so when I even came back home, I also still have this, like, two hearts in one place now, because as much as, you know, this will always be my home, I had made some great friendships in the States that I did miss.
Oh, that's great to hear. With me, when I moved, and we'll get to it because you went to UVI here, and I'm going to say why I always felt I wish I went UVI. Instead, I went to Xavier in Cincinnati, Ohio, and my transition, although I was older, and the butterflies was kind of still there. And actually, the other day, I do tours as well for the island. So I was doing a tour the other day, and somebody was from the Midwest, and I was trying to remember the word, because they asked, like, what type of language we speak here. I said, we speak English, but if I was speaking to somebody from home, I would speak faster, and I would use slang words. So then you would get caught up thinking it's a different language when it's not, because you just got lost by, like, I gave them an example. I said the word D-E in VI talk mean almost five different words. So by the time you listen to day and I saying, you think I still saying T-H-E-Y, I'm saying T-H-E. By the time you catch on, I done on another one and I might have used another slang and throw you off and think it's a different language. But I told her when I went to Xavier, I had to slow down and pronounce my words because I hated when they told me please. And I used to be like, please what, pass the ketchup, pass the mayo, what's please? But in the Midwest, please meant repeat yourself. So I was tired of hearing please. So that's a word, when I gave her the tour the other day and she was trying, I kept thinking about the word. I said, I can't find the word. And then after she left, I found the word. I'm never going to forget that word now again because I used to hate people telling me please. And I used to be like, please, please what? So that's what, yeah. So yeah, I went to Xavier. So my transition wasn't as bad because I wasn't like you. I wasn't as young. You could get teased a lot in the sense that when you're younger. But then you went to a place that had a lot of people from the Caribbean. I went to the Midwest where we didn't have too much Caribbean. It was hard to even find Vita Malt and different. You had to go to one Jamaican store that wasn't. I'm sure there's more now in Cincinnati. But back in Cincinnati when I went to school, there was one Jamaican restaurant and you could have find maybe a Malta India. Not even a Vita Malt. A Malta India is where you're going to find. So that was my experience. So then you came back home. You graduated from CHS. How was that for you? Did you was it the 4 years or was it less than 4 years after you stayed at CHS?
So I was at CHS for 3 years, it was a very enjoyable experience. I had the opportunity to actually participate in some of the first AP classes that CHS offered, and when I was a senior, because I was also studying Spanish. As one of my AP courses, we had a chance to do an excursion to Mexico. And so as part of the excursion, we went to Mexico for 10 days. And I tell people this, I'm like, what, CHS students? I'm like, yes, they had about 15 of us. And we actually stayed with families from across, well, in the area in Cuernavaca. And we had a chance to, like, taste the foods from the families and visit the pyramids and go on. I know it's a gondola, you know, in Italy, but that's not the name that they use in Mexico. But still, it was really an excursion because we were able to immerse ourselves in the food, the culture. We even had, like, a dancing class. But in the daytime, we actually took Spanish lessons as if though we were, you know, students living in Mexico. So that was a pretty amazing experience there. And then I also had the opportunity to be a president of my class, and so we did quite a bit for our senior year, just in celebration of, you know, finally being able to graduate. And so that was that was also a pretty amazing opportunity. In fact, I'm coming up on my 20th anniversary from CHS, so that's also exciting. And many of my classmates are working diligently to try and make this year special.
Great to hear. As an individual who went to Mexico, and I know you said he stayed with a family, how was the being around the different type of families? You felt that with 10 days, that's a long time. I mean, you had to go to church with them, and some of them went to work while you were going to school. So you went to a kind of a school camp at the same time that the family was going to work. How did that work?
Well, we all attended the same class. We weren't immersed in normal school. The teachers came to us. But we did, just like them, like when they went off to work, we went off to school. We went to do different site, like visits to different tours. Mm-hmm. It was funny because each group of students, we were put in pairs. And my pair, she was very good at understanding Spanish, and I was good at speaking Spanish. And so we worked together where she essentially did some translating for me, and I'd, you know, tell the family what it is that we wanted. to do or eat or whatever.
So the family didn't speak English?
No, they did not speak any English. So we were forced to speak Spanish, which was great because when you're placed in those kinds of situations, you learn so much quicker. And unlike, you know, Spanish that's spoken in the Caribbean, specifically Puerto Rico and correct, the Dominican Republic, it's a very fast Spanish, whereas in Mexico, their Spanish, just like their dialect in general, is a very slower pace. So it was actually a lot easier to understand, you know, Mexicans than it was than, you know, interacting with people that live here more commonly in the Virgin Islands.
How did your parents feel about, because I'm telling you, I have a daughter. She wasn't going on that trip. Unless I was going, I'm just being frank. I was telling somebody today, I watched Taken, all three Takens, and my heart races every time I watch Taken. So it's kind of hard for me to see myself letting my daughter go. Like, it's just, I don't know if I could do it.
Yeah, well, you know, it comes down to trust. And trust both on the parent side, the child side. But I'm sure my father had reservations. But at the end of the day, you know, how, especially being an opportunity to learn in a foreign country, I think he just didn't want me to miss out on that. And so that's why I was able to go, which I'm truly grateful for, because I still have such fond memories of being able to go to Mexico that first time.
Well, nice. Puerto Rico is right next door, so they could learn how to speak Spanish. So you came back, you graduated from CHS, and you chose to go to UVI. What made you choose UVI over another university?
Well, initially, I actually did move to, I went to Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida, where I was studying international business. And I remember making that decision on, like, all the schools I got accepted to, all of this. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. They're all in the north, and I don't like the cold. You know, that was very poor decision-making. So I ended up going to Eckerd College, which is in Florida, to study international business, anthropology. And about a year in, after my first year, it just didn't become feasible for my family and I to maintain my studies there. And that's what actually brought me back to attend the University of the Virgin Islands. But I'm truly glad that I did, because I feel like a lot of people aren't aware of the many opportunities that actually exist at UVI, whether it's also their exchange program where you can, you know, exchange with another student and go live somewhere else, or go to school in another country, but also I was able to participate in their Thurgood Marshall program as well, which gave me many opportunities to go to the States, go to career fairs, participate as the ambassador, like as a representative for UVI, and being able to share all the wonderful things about attending at HBCU, which, again, would not have been my college experience if I had decided to stay at the private institution in Florida.
Yeah, but I was kind of, I didn't want to go to Xavier, to tell you the truth, but my mom is like a mosquito in my ear harassing me about going to school, and she was paying, so I didn't care, so fine. I wish I went to UVI. I mean, I tell people all the time, but my mom knew if I went to UVI, I wouldn't have graduated. I would have been at jam band functions and hanging out. And so I wouldn't have made it. So she understood why she had to send me away to Xavier. And I mean, I totally love UVI in the sense, another green space campus. My campus, I went from all things to non-green to Xavier, which is a little bit green, but UVI is totally having a golf course and property. I mean, you guys, we don't use it, and to me they should, but anyway, that alone, all our green space and how it's set up, it's is just set up unique.
Sitting on a beach,
yeah,
right?
And having your own beach.
That's not very common.
Yeah, how hard is that? And then you guys don't have snow, because my first semester of snow, I hated Xavier. I wanted to come. I think this is cold. I hate up here. But I had to finish as my mom said. Let me take a quick commercial break. We'll be back in about a minute and a half. We'll be right back.
Swim classes at the St. Thomas Swimming Association. Drowning is quick, but drowning can be prevented. Drowning is the single leading cause of death for children under the age of 4. Summer is upon us, and it's all about pool and play. Learn to swim at the St. Thomas Swimming Association. We offer American Red Cross classes for age 6 months through adults. We have sessions beginning June 13, 2022. For more information, please call 340-244-1359. That's 340-244-1359.
Attention all private homeowners and contractors. East Caribbean Metals, located on the island of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, have affordable pricing on all roofing material, PVC pipes, steel, and much more. Call East Caribbean Metals, 1-784-456-1843. Remember, your U.S. dollar goes further when you purchase your building supplies from East Caribbean Metals. Visit www.ecmil.net for more product information.
Are you looking for stew cherries or even some delicious coquita with various assorted flavors? Call 407-719-2635. No need to have them only for Christmas or Carnival. Don't forget, we have family away and they are always looking for some sweets from home. So call 407-719-2635.
Thank you so much for staying tuned to 90.9 FM. My name is Lawrence Bajolta. My guest today is Chanel Peterson from WAPA. So, Chanel, before we start talking about WAPA, I got one or two more questions. When you finished college and you enjoyed it here, what was next on your agenda?
So while I was at the University of the Virgin Islands, as I mentioned, I was able to participate as the ambassador for the Thurgood Marshall College program. And that led me to participating in an internship in New York City with a company from the States. And so I actually went to the States my junior year. And I did a summer program for 2 months in New York City where I worked downtown. I was living in Brooklyn. And upon my graduation, that same school a year later offered me a position to join their company in Florida. And so I ended up moving away and I lived in the States for 9 years. With that company, I started off in Florida and I got promoted to manager, overseeing most of the states in the South, so Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and then I moved to Texas and worked there for a while. Then I got promoted to Missouri, so I know about living in the Midwest, in Kansas City, and then in 2018 is when I returned to the territory.
Mm. You mentioned New York. How did you like living in New York? I had actually interviewed somebody yesterday, but it wasn't on air because it'll be on Monday, and he lives in New York, and I tell him, look, I don't like New York. That I thought Union Station, I used to live in Washington DC, I thought Union Station was busy until I went to Penn Station. I think, wait, this is crazy. When you see that, you're looking up and seeing what track 18, and for somebody new, track 18 to me doesn't make sense, but somebody who's been there knows where track 18 is, so they feel more comfortable. So I was, and I think our trains in DC are much better. So simple, yellow line, blue line, orange line, simple stuff, and they have, to me, they talk to you better at each stop. But like I said, maybe because I wasn't in the lingo like you guys, feeling comfortable, everything to me was a negative compared to in DC where I used to live. I used to love it. I was like, this is simple, go down, you know which track to catch, it wasn't hard, the yellow line, the green line, blue line. So, but New York is busy for real. When they say the city that never sleep, they in line 3, 4, 5. I flew in there actually the other day to JFK, and to me the airport didn't close down. I had missed the flight to go to Virginia, so I had to stay there because I hate to leave airports. I hate to leave to get back in for TSA, so the next flight was first thing in the morning. So, but the flights were going on all night. I couldn't believe how busy the place was. So I don't know how you had, like, moving from a small island like this and living in the big city.
So it was definitely a culture shock because, as you said, New York really doesn't sleep. And I have such a vivid memory because my job at that time as an intern, I had 100 customers, and I went from store to store to store, and I had a couple, like, distributors, bodegas, and as I'm going around the city, I remember sitting down in my car, that the company vehicle, and I remember thinking, like, oh my gosh, I have not heard silence for the last 4 weeks. And, you know, coming from St. Thomas, there's tons of silence. You know, like, there are many, many moments of there's no cars, no horns, whereas in New York, that doesn't exist.
Yeah, they blow the horn, you know, for nothing.
Constantly. And between the millions of people just walking by, I mean, it was a huge change. But I've always been a person to find the best in people. And so when I go to my customers, we'd always have fun and we'd have an enjoyable time, even though truly I'm selling them a product at that point. But I just remember being enthralled with how diverse New York City was. Like, I met people from India, people from the Middle East, people from all countries of Africa. I mean, people from Vietnam. And they were always very willing to teach me something about where they were from or teach me something about how they live their lives, you know, in New York City, because many of them were transplants or, you know, they had really, dove into the New York City culture because of where they worked. So I found it very educational, actually. And that year that I was there was Celebrate Brooklyn. And that's where I was living. So they had concerts in the park.
Moffett.
Yes, exactly. In fact, I wish I could remember, but I saw several, like, reggae artists while I was in Brooklyn. I got to see, like, symphonies and ballets. And this is just all free to the public, you know, at Prospect Park. So that was, it was really, like, one of the best summers I've been able to have. And so I think that was really due to me attending UVI, having the opportunity to participate in the Thurgood Marshall program and meeting this company at one of the career fairs.
Yeah, that's amazing and cool. I find it unique that they would find you at the University of Virgin Islands and you went to this internship and then just offer you a job. That's incredible.
Yeah. Well, there were about 7 of us in their first and only internship, I have to say. So I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign. But out of the 7 of us that actually intern, they end up only hiring 2. A gentleman who lived in Portland, because we were all over the U.S., and then myself. And so when they had offered me, they're like, do you want to live in New York or do you want to live in Florida? And I'm thinking to myself, tax rate, cold. No, I'm like, no, I'm going to choose Florida. Florida sounds like my cup of tea.
Well, that's nice to hear. So I only have you for another 10 or 15 minutes. I guess I'll stretch out as long as I can. If you could explain to us a little bit of your position at WAPA and anything that you like to provide to the public that can improve. I mean, most individuals around you listen to some of the different talk shows, and as I told most of my guests know, but I'll say it again. You would accept calls. I don't accept calls on none of my shows, really. There's other programs on 90.9 that do accept phone calls. I don't accept phone calls on none of my radios. I'm on Monday, Tuesday, and also Saturdays, and I don't accept phone calls. So I just wanted to make it clear that you weren't the one that didn't want the phone calls. It was me, the host, who states that I do not accept phone calls from the public. So I don't want it to seem that, she came on as a WAPA official and they didn't want to take phone calls. Larry Bushalter is who didn't want no phone calls, and I don't accept phone calls. So just give us a little information about a little bit about where you work at WAPA and any information you want to provide to the public.
Absolutely. And thank you for that disclaimer. I won't get wrapped up for anything. At least for this. So I am the Director of Corporate Communications for the Authority. I joined WAPA in October of last year. So I officially made 6 months earlier this week.
You have probation.
Indeed, I made it. So what I do is I oversee communication that comes from the authority, both internally and externally. So we work on press releases. So when we have project updates, we've been creating press releases to update the community. In addition to that, one of the things that I've been very adamant on is putting more people in front of the camera at WAPA so people can see the people behind these projects. recently we did an interview with Shavante Marsh, who is the new director of project management, and she talked about the updates on the Wärtsilä project and how we had a successful transfer of the battery energy storage system that's going to be a true game changer for the island of St. Thomas, as well as just the overall district, which includes St. John and Water Island. And then in addition to that, I also oversee outreach. And so we also coordinate and attend different schools. In fact, we participated in the Week of the Young Child last week. So we were able to attend two different schools in St. Croix. And for the schools that we weren't able to physically attend, we actually created a 5-minute video that was child appropriate, where we talked about what it is that WAPA does in terms of creating power and distributing water. And then we also talked about water conservation as well as electrical safety. And those are some of the things that we share with students as young as pre-K or K-3. And then to our high school students, we work with human resources to educate about internships that are available, as well as for some of the high school students who are over 18. We have apprenticeships that are available, and then, of course, our scholarships and just the many different careers. I tell people this all the time because I didn't know that, but WAPA has over 500 employees, and that blew my mind because as much as I knew that, you know, WAPA does quite a bit when it comes to just the essential needs for the territory and providing water and power, I had no idea it took so many bodies to make this possible. And when I explain, you know, that we have two power plants, one in St. Thomas and then one in St. Croix, and then in addition to that, our water department does a lot of testing, both, you know, at the facility, but then also around the territory or around the island. So these are the things, you know, I was able to learn about, and then the administration side and all the support that's needed to ensure our line workers, our plant operators are all supported. And so those are some of the things that we tend to educate, that it's, when you think about WAPA, it's not just one career, but there's a career for engineers, there's a career in accounting, there's a career in legal, there's a career as a technician, as a repairman, because, you know, we have hundreds of vehicles that need repairing. So these, I think people are often just, they don't know. So the younger we start in educating our students and our youth about the opportunities here, and very much like what many of us have done, whether it's attending UVI and then staying here or attending school in the States and then coming back, we really want to increase the work talent that we're able to maintain here in the territory. So that's part of the role there. And then supporting other communication needs, whether it's from the executive office or human resources, on sharing internal opportunities for team building and similar wellness activities is how we support within communications.
Great. How would somebody want, if somebody wanted WAPA to come to their school, who would they contact?
So they can reach out to WAPA Communications at wapa.vi, and that comes directly to myself and my team. If they happen to find me, just reach out to me, chanel.peterson@viwapa.vi. They can also, you know, just call in and go through the directory, or again, just request to speak with me or my team member, Naomi Gum. She's the Deputy Director of Communications. We are very much interested in expanding our reach. In fact, just today I was conversing with our customer service manager, and we talked about activating outreach program for the elderly, because a lot of the elderly, they are not aware of how to utilize the online portal, or oftentimes they have a third party that may actually be more beneficial to assist them. So those are some other things that we're going to be starting up. We're only just getting started at WAPA. There's much more to come as my team grows. We are hiring currently a digital media coordinator. And so I do encourage people to, you know, apply for that position if you feel you're eligible and you're interested in working with the WAPA family.
As an individual who Well, I don't pay. My wife pays online, but I know VI people, most Virgin Islanders, like to pay in person, because I sometimes drive by and I see this long line. And I'm like, what happened to giving away bread? And it's people standing in line to pay WAPA bill. So is there a way that your office can work with some of these individuals to find out? Because sometimes all it takes is one little explanation, like bringing them in and explaining to them how they could do another way of payment. And it changes your life, because sometimes you just, and I'll say even myself, you're stuck in a way and you don't want to change because you might know, but you really don't know, and you're too scared to ask. So if they're told and shown a different way, then they might say, hey, then your line won't be as long. You won't have as much criticism. Your customer service and the individual who has to take the money to cashier them won't be cost out as much. So it's a trickling effect. It's just a suggestion, not to say that you should, but I just always thought that line for WAPA makes you guys look bad, and it's not your fault, because there's other ways to pay this bill.
Absolutely. Well, we encourage it, and that is definitely one of the upcoming campaigns that we're going to be working on. In fact, there are really two big ones digitally that I'm going to have the coordinator work on, and that's getting people to know or just become aware that we do have an online portal. Another thing is building that trust. So I am aware that, you know, there was a breach a few years ago, and I think we lost the trust of the community when it came to paying online, and we're very pleased to note that we've amped up our security. In fact, we're now storing much of our information in a cloud through a secure company. And so there have been a lot of changes on the IT side to ensure that people's information is safe. And so that's going to be part of the campaign, is letting people know that, yes, you can pay online. And like you said, I pay online as well, and it takes me a whole 3 minutes. And in fact, I know we have a much older population here in the territory. And so sometimes that face-to-face is important in terms of showing them, okay, this is what you have to do next, this is what you have to do next. And then once they go through it, they're good to go, because it's that easy. And in fact, even just this past weekend, I just happened to be at the Sunny Isles business office. And as I was walking out, a lady came up, a little, you know, a slightly older woman, and she was coming with her card to pay. And I said, you know what, you could do this online. And I showed her in 5 minutes, and she was like, wow, thank you so much. Now I don't have to come back. And I'm like, great, because now you're happy, because mm-hmm. it's more convenient mm-hmm. to pay online. And like you said, we're happy because our lines are shorter, and we don't have as many complaints, because most of the time, a lot of these folks really are just coming to pay. So, and I, in fact, part of that campaign is going to talk about not just paying online, but for folks who are, you know, regularly at the bank, you can pay your bill at First Bank, at Banco Popular, as well as Bank of St. Croix. And so there are other options when, let's say, you know, you just happen to not have internet for whatever reason. Like, you can go to the bank, you can pay there as well. And you can even call in and pay by phone through an automated system where you don't have to wait to talk to somebody. You just click option 3 and you can pay by phone as well. So there are a lot of options before coming down to stand in the mm-hmm. line to pay someone now. And then keep in mind, you know, sometimes you do have customers that pay with cash. And that's why we always opt, well, if you need to pay by cash, think of, you know, utilizing the bank as another place, because more than likely you're going to the bank anyway at some point to deposit your cash for your account. So things like that. And that's all going to be part of the campaign that we're going to put out there to educate people so we can reduce the lines, because we are still understaffed within the customer service department across both on St. Thomas and on St. Croix. And so the last people that we have that are doing that can do these things online, it actually be better for the people who are coming in who need further assistance beyond just paying for their bill.
Yeah, great. I think I met Naomi before. I'm not sure, but I was at a function down at UVI with the ADA conference. And that's when I was explaining to her that I think you guys have such a great way of getting information out with that bill, that WAPA bill, because everybody reads it. So that's like a great way of teaching what you just stated of all the different ways of pain. But not only that, but different ways of how you could reduce your electric bill. And I'm sure they should read it, or how you could improve on your electric bill and even work with some of the other. Well, that back then I was telling Julian Henley that he needs to hop on with WAPUP so that all the individuals who have an issue in the ADA case could be given information about how WAPUP can help them. And the best thing is the bill, because one thing everybody read, even before they read the Daily News, is that WAPUP bill.
Yes. Well, I'm still learning about the many ways, but a few weeks ago when we were sharing how we're going to communicate the updates on the Campo Rico project in St. Croix, the water rehabilitation project, we have spoken about how we can utilize the WAPUP bill to be more informative. My thing is, right now the WAPUP bill is still a much tiny print. So that's going to be a complete overhaul of change to ensure that the information that we're sharing is actually going to be something that stands out, so people can see that, hey, this is, you know, this is important, or this is something that I should be mindful of. But I completely agree, because like you said, everybody's going to read their WAPUP bill. And even if you're not getting it physically, you can also, like, the same information provided on your e-bill as well.
Yeah, I totally agree and understand. As a person for director of communications, I know you said you started to do some interviews, which is incredible. How can people access those interviews so that they could see the different individuals that you're interviewing from across WAPUP?
So we are placing them on our social media pages. So WAPUP has a Facebook page. We have an Instagram page, we have a Twitter page, we also have a LinkedIn page. And so what we normally do is, when we're doing a project update, we'll pair the press release with a video. And so we'll post the videos on each of our social media pages so that they can find them there. We're in the process right now of redesigning our website, and that's one of the things that we want to add, is just more visibility to our social media pages on our website, but then also these videos that we're creating to also be able to host them on our website, so people can learn gradually about all the different projects. Because we get that question about what's WAPUP doing, and in reality, WAPUP is doing a lot. Between the power side and the water side, there are literally hundreds of projects happening simultaneously. Though we do have about 10 big projects, there are so many other smaller initiatives that are simultaneously occurring that's working towards better serving the community.
Do I have a couple more minutes with you to take a break, or do you want to wrap up? It's up to you. I know I already stretched your past your time limit that you were going to give me.
No problem. Yes, we can take a break. I'll be on.
Okay, great. I'll be back in about a minute.
What does freedom of movement mean to you? At Therapy Works, we are movement experts. We begin our treatment with an in-depth conversation to understand your ailment, causes, and goals. This will enable us to create the best treatment plan that will rehabilitate your body and lead you to a pain-free and functional future. At Therapy Works, we provide a variety of services related to rehabilitation, from a stroke, muscular injuries, and provide services for balance disorders, sports recovery, massage and stretch therapy, dry needling, assessments related to workplace setup, lymphatic drainage, and so much more. Visit our interactive website at www.therapyworksvi.com or stop in at one of our three locations. Cyril B. Romney Tortola Fair Park, Rotown Tortola, Town Center, the Valley Virgin Gorda, or Barbell Plaza on St. Thomas. Call us today in Tortola at 284-444-4678, in Virgin Gorda at 284-495-5678, or in St. Thomas at 340-779-4678. Remember, when movement matters, therapy.
Hi, good day. Do you live in the BVI or the USVI and want to advertise your product? Well, you've come to the right place. on FM 90.9 and FM 92.3, you can advertise your business or your event. All you have to do is call Atanya at 407-719-2635. Call Atanya if you live in the BVI or the USVI and want to advertise your product or your business and you want to reach more listeners. Call Atanya at 407-719-2635.
Thank you so much for staying tuned to 90.9 FM. My name is Lawrence Peralta. My guest this evening is Chanel Peterson of WAPA. So Chanel, as the person in charge of director of communications for WAPA, is the complaint section falls under your division?
No. And I shouldn't say no. Somewhat. But basically, when we receive complaints, whether it's social media or it's via email, we assess that complaint and then send it to the department that can address the customer's complaint. So sometimes we'll send it to customer service. Sometimes it's an issue that requires human resources. And sometimes it's a suggestion or feedback on what we can do better, and we'll share that information with the appropriate department.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't fix those problems that the customer may have. We put them in contact with the right person. And sometimes even to, let's say, if a customer is having a challenge reaching someone, I'll even recommend them to copy communications, and so we can follow up with the appropriate person and or ensure that, you know, someone is working on their issue. And one of the things that I found very beneficial today, even because I had a chance to sort of like spend the day with the customer service manager, we went over to St. John. We took a look at the business office in St. John and talked about some of her ideas on improving outreach, improving communication. And one of the things I learned is even when we send customer complaints to customer service then assesses what's happening, and then either they're reaching out to meter reading, or they're reaching out to internal audit, or they're reaching out to literally five to six, seven different departments that may actually be the ones who can resolve the problem. So there is a little bit of a sort of like a few steps,
yeah,
exactly, before solutions are actually, or before the issue is resolved. And that's one of the things that customer service is actively working on, is improving their timeliness. Because a lot of times, well, I shouldn't say a lot, most times, you know, we're dealing with people who are either out of service, whether it's water or power, or they're complaining about something that requires a physical presence, somebody to come and visit their home to check on something physically. And so for things like that, customer service then is reliant on the other departments to be just as responsive, whether it's the person to go out and check the meter, to do an update, to check their account. So it's because it's such a complex system, we have these steps in place to ensure that the experts are available to actually solve the issues.
And earlier you mentioned that you bring the communication from the employees to management and management to the employees. That's a fine tight rule, because then you might have the employee say, she just went management. And then if you do too much on the employee side, who you work for also damn. So how is that tight rule for you?
It really is a balancing act. You know, at the end of the day, when it comes to constructive criticism, when it comes to feedback, the driving factor that I always keep in mind is everything I'm doing is to help somebody do better and or to help someone feel better. So whether it's a complaint from employee or it's something that management would like to communicate to their to the authority itself or to the employees, I'm always being mindful of our tone, because the intention on either side is to just have a better experience at the authority while we're working here. And because we are a 24-hour, 365-day agency, they're really, you can really become burnt out. And so being able to ensure that employees are happy.
Let me jump in a quick second because people don't understand that. They don't understand. You said something that should hit home on a lot of people, but... And I like to dog my U.S. Virgin Islanders a lot because we love a fete, and we like to party, and we like to say that could be done tomorrow. But you stated that WAPA is at 365 days, 24/7. There ain't no break time, ain't no tomorrow here. Ain't no, you know what? I going to leave that light switch off when I come back. All right, because that light switch could be somebody else's electricity. And then when they don't have electricity, we as a group of people mad because WAPA out. Oh, this out, the water in on, the street light gone, all kind of stuff. But they don't understand that when one person don't do their job, it affects a lot of other people. So I'm glad you stayed today because I stay there all the time. We have, not only with WAPA, I just talking about our work ethics in general. Sometimes we as U.S. Virgin Islands, I can't speak for America because I don't live in America no more. I can't speak for the BVI because I don't live there. I live in St. Thomas. And sometimes... we look at work as, oh, that could get done tomorrow, not understanding it affects somebody. And until we work and do our job like we're supposed to do our job, no matter what the situation is, then is when U.S. Virgin Islands are going to start being a better place than what we expect it to be.
Absolutely. And a big part of that, when you talk about, you know, what is WAPA doing when the power is on? It's like we're keeping the power on. That is what we're actually doing. You know, we're not just working when the power goes out. We have a preventative maintenance department that are constantly doing tests and checks and balances on the equipment, on the facilities, at the power plants. And then we also have a maintenance department that, you know, continually working on maintenance. So there are people around the clock that are working to maintain the power so that when, you know, power does go out, in fact, it's those same people who are there that's now working on that issue. It's not like most of the people are running home, running, coming from home. No, there are people that have been there, but for whatever reason, because of our outdated infrastructure, a lot of these outages aren't at the hands of a worker. They're at the hands of the machinery. I get a lot of questions from the media about, you know, why are we seeing certain outages? And usually it comes down to, honestly, four to five things. A car collided into a pole, or there's some type of overgrown vegetation, which can also mean, you know, if we have any type of heavy rain or wind and trees can interfere with a line, that can cause an outage as well. And then our outdated infrastructure, whether it's out in the field or at the plant, which is why we're really working hard towards moving away from the older, larger generation units to smaller, more efficient generation units. Because the generation units in St. Thomas are so large, when there's a power outage, more people are impacted. Whereas you don't find that as much on St. Croix because there's also more redundancy in St. Croix. So when there's a power outage, they can put up or they can bring online another generation unit, which can then have the power on within 20 to 30 minutes. St. Thomas doesn't have that just yet, but that's why the Wardzillas are going to be so important. Such a critical moment for the authority and for the territory, because we're going to finally see that redundancy in addition to the benefits of the battery energy storage system that we call BEST.
Is there, and as an individual myself growing up, learning so much about WAPA, and I actually have WAPA as one of my tour sites. When I tour the island, I stop by and I show my guests. So this is what produces the power. And it varies on the guests because some guests are off the cruise ship. And the one I had this week stayed. They were staying at Sapphire. And I was saying, the power that you have at Sapphire, this is where it comes from. And one of their first questions, of course, is the same thing what you just stated. And I said, yeah, we have diesel and we're moving to propane. And there's certain generation that does both, that does diesel and the propane, but they're trying to do as much alternative energy as possible. Is there anything in the future? I know I read some stuff about us trying to increase the solar, and also I don't think wind, but mostly solar and the propane. Is there anything else coming on the down the various meetings that you've been to that can assist in providing more information about that?
Absolutely. So I don't know if you recall this, but a couple of years back, and you probably do, the territory developed Vision 2040, and that was led by the Economic Development Authority. And I worked personally on that project. And the goal or the vision in 20 years is for the territory to be 75% on renewable energy sources. And when we first proposed that number to our focus groups and our working groups and our stakeholder meetings, people were like, 75% renewable energy? No way, not on this island. There's just, I don't believe it. And then not kidding, but 3 months later, Hawaii comes out, wins a grant, and they are shooting for 100% renewable energy wow. across all of Hawaii. And so here we are, and I'm like, see guys, this 75% is not out of reach if Hawaii is shooting for 100. And the fact that we have the elements in that we have the sun, we have the wind, we just recently, our board approved power purchase agreements for solar and for wind that's going to be on St. Thomas, St. John, and St. Croix. Now they are going to start with St. Croix, and the goal is to have the solar farm in St. Croix up and running within the next 2 years, and then within the next following 2 years to have St. Thomas and St. John with solar and wind as well. So we're potentially looking at the next 4 years having a third of our energy being supplied by renewable energy. So I say if we can do that in 4 years, I'm sure our goal of 75% is doable. So this is exciting because, as mentioned, for people who may not be aware, but solar and wind energy have a much lower rate than utilizing generation units that use diesel and or propane. And to the point that you had made previously, part of why we're shifting away from diesel is diesel is a lot more costly than propane. And in addition to that, it's a lot more detrimental to the environment. And so, you know, our natural resources are very finite. And part of our mission at the authority is to protect the environment and to protect our natural resources. And so by having more renewable energy, we'll be doing exactly that, in addition to having more generation units that are off of diesel and on a cleaner fuel, which is propane.
I totally agree. One last question because I'm running out of time. I know that WAPA has a lot of plans to put a lot of the power underground. Is it close to 100% of the goal that they had from the power plant? I know there's at least it goes underground to the hospital. What branches are you going to have the branches out of that main line to try and keep? And I know downtown is, because after the storm, I think they were up within a week. Less than a week. I think it was 3 days or something like that, that power was to downtown and the hospital was the same date. So they have 24 hours, like you say, 24/7 power running to the hospital at all times.
Yes. So we have several underground projects. And of course, with placing more of the power lines underground, that just makes us more resilient and reliable and ensures more stability during the storms or during hurricane season. So currently, we have the underground project in St. John, which is 100% complete for overall construction. And then we have in St. Croix, a container port underground project, which is going to lead from like Melvin to Elvins Highway to Molasses Pier. And then that one is also The construction is 100% complete. So right now they're working on energizing that particular container port and swapping out the transformer. And then we also have the Golden Grove project, which is close to completion, whereas the remaining work also includes transferring some secondaries to underground. And energizing those new transformers as well. And then we also have the Midland project in St. Croix, which is at 98% complete with just a bit of work needed there, as well as energizing the feeders from the Greg Willix substation. So the underground projects that's proposed for St. Thomas, I don't have those details, but I know that it is part of the plan to have a lot more. One thing we have noted is it's a lot easier and cost effective for underground projects in St. Croix because it's flatter. But whereas in St. Thomas, you know, we're a lot more mountainous terrain. Mm-hmm, correct. But there are areas as
well. Well, St. Thomas is also known as Rock City anyway.
Exactly. Exactly, for good reason, right?
Well, when I give my tours, you notice when you go by the cemetery, we bury above ground. So I told them they have to look at back in the day. They didn't have backhoes or tractivators. The man them just give up and start burying above ground. They say, "Forget this, my son. I tired. I ain't digging no hole." And the man bury, and it just stuck. So that's why we bury above ground here. I know I go to St. Croix and I see them bury like if in the States, I see it on the ground.
Yes, and then that's what I think very surprising, and that's what makes the territory as a whole a very complex place.
I don't want to cut you off. I know. First of all, I'm excited that you stayed an extra half an hour after you were trying to put a half an hour, thinking it would have been a hard interview. But I'm out of time. If you want to say anything last before you go, feel free, and you're always invited to come back.
I just want to say thank you so much for having the Water and Power Authority this evening to share with the community what we have coming up in addition to what we're doing right now, and to know that we are doing our absolute best to provide better services because we are aware of our challenges. We are very aware of it. And so we continue to appreciate the feedback from the community, and even the ones that have a few bad, but like we say, bring it on, because you know when it comes to improving, that's only gonna it's only going to help us to know more. Correct. Of what the concerns are. And for folks who aren't aware, please do check us out on social media, where you can learn about the different projects that we're sharing and get updates on our press releases, and then just to be informed about whether it's outages or lane closures for the work that's being conducted. And again, I'm Chanel Peterson, and thank you.
Thank you so much, and we look forward to hearing from you again. That brings us to our end of Just Government for this evening. I should be on Friday with Your Voice with Randolph Bennett, and then I'm on Saturday 12 to 158, and Sunday Just Quail Bay and Fuji Music, Sunday 2 to 358. Thank you so much for staying tuned to 90.9 FM.